This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Knowledge
Bank. Well, you will be part of the Knowledge Bank on 0861-987-000 this morning. And that's where we will talk about all things BEE. And I suppose, I'm not sure if it's a coincidence or by design. Team, I never know about these things. But talking about, you know, BEE, the mining charter, the South African economy, the need to disrupt and all of that. On the day where, you know, the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy is under siege from communities, really communicating the displeasure that people have with elites who do not seem to listen to communities nor make sure that there is the implementation of standing things that are part of the mining license, such as social and labor plans, things that are there in the legislation, at least as the bare minimums that these corporations should actually implement in communities. Of course, you've got different models. I mean, right there in the Platinum Belt, you've got the Royal Bafokeng who do things differently for their community as to how others like your Impala plates and your Anglo plates and so on. There's no Impala plates anymore. What was it called now? So now, Banya Stillwater and Don. Oh, yebo. Minister, they're really under siege. And my guest is on the line, senior lecturer at the University of Limpopo. Dr. Makgoba, good morning to you and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Tate Mugun.
How are you? Well?
All is well, and thanks for having me.
No, thank you for your time and, of course, just your intellectual gymnastics that allow us to have some stuff to nibble on. Really, we got our attention caught by this paper, which was published by the Journal of Public Administration, Volume 56, number issue 3, last year. And I thought, let's talk to you. And it just somehow happens to coincide with the mining indaba taking place in the province of Northwest, which really is fantastic because your focus is in mining. Makgoba, I'm not sure if your line, you are moving or what. I just have a bit of like a little wind on it. I'm just going to ask Banyana to make sure that that line is as clean as possible. Let's take a short break and then we will start with the Knowledge Bank.
This is your world. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
13 minutes past 11. Dr. Makgoba, I think your line is fine now. Perhaps I always start, you know, in the Knowledge Bank, especially with academic papers, with the famous academic question what is the question you are trying to answer with this piece of writing? Because then it helps guide our conversation as we tease out all the elements, including some of the theories or at least theoretical paradigms that you have utilized to find a way to interpret BEE in the manner in which you did.
Okay. I think in South Africa, and this is also common in the academic space, there is a misconception that BEE is radical transformative. Mm. And I quote different people who have made such allegations. And the question that I wanted to answer is BEE transformative or is it a continuation of a neoliberal project? Mm. And my conclusion was that it is actually a continuation of a neoliberal project. But there's something that is striking about this, is that the mining charter and the BEE legislation and the mining corporation have taken over this. They use anti-colonial and anti-apartheid discourse to perpetuate neoliberalism. From a distance, when you look at the legislation and the policy document, you kind of feel like maybe there's something transformative happening here. But when you kind of peel those layers, you realize that actually there've been an abuse and misappropriation of the discourses of anti-colonialism to perpetuate neoliberalism. And I think that's something that has been happening since 1994 in South Africa.
Now, let's step back a little bit and help with, you know, decoding some of the concepts that are involved here. We often at times see some people almost using neoliberalism as a swear word. So when you talk about an economy that is sort of predicated on neoliberal dictates, what do you mean by neoliberal?
In the context of this paper, neoliberalism means the restructuring of power and social relations in line with the demands of global capitalism, which means that all neoliberal governments do is to make sure that their policies are geared towards saving capital. And that's precisely what's happening in this country, actually.
Now, of course, you are employing the critical discourse analysis as a way to try and embed this in your paper. You do tell us that, you know, critical discourse analysis is not just only about language, but also some social theories. A person interested in this paper, can you just also take us through why the critical discourse analysis paradigm becomes important for you to employ in this paper?
I think CDA becomes important because we are interested in understanding language use. For instance, if somebody delivers a paper in a conference and says, thanks everyone for listening, in discourse analysis terms, we are going to say that the speaker assumes that everybody in that context is able to listen, which means that they are operating with an ableist paradigm of society. So in the context of this paper, we use CDA to understand how mining corporations and the government use language to frame their different ideologies. So what we do with CDA is to look at words and link them to their political context. If somebody talks about BEE as transformative, but when you go into the language, they then talk about targets, scoreboards. The language of scoreboards then gives us an entry into the discourse of neoliberalism, because we know that anything that is reformist or anything that is right-wing serves neoliberalism, and that's how we use CDA. So in short, CDA is all about understanding how language is being used to exercise power. And if you are using an everyday normal discourse analysis, you will not get it, because you need to have a theories of power which kind of helps you to link the words and the political context that which they belong, so that you kind of extrapolate on the existence of power relations that operate in South Africa or society in general.
Now, of course, Dr. Makgoba, let's come now back to the history of BEE itself and how, you know, it came about to be policy. There are a number of, you know, contentious points that you raise just about its history. I mean, you say it was intended or branded as this radical policy, but you say at times we don't focus on the ANC government, what it has been able to do, being able to talk left and walk right. But you also say in some part of the paper that it almost appeared as an outsourcing of political responsibility for transformation because of this managerial corporatized type of language, but also a way in which it would be implemented, as you talk about scorecards, targets, and all of these things which you feel were not enough to be constituted as a radical departure from the apartheid, you know, capitalist economy.
So in this paper, one of the arguments that I'm trying to put forward is that BEE emerged as a tool for white capital in South Africa to preserve itself. That's where BEE started.
Okay.
The formalization of BEE started under Thabo Mbeki, in which the BEE Commission, which was a constitution of white corporations with the black elite, gathered to produce what we call the BEE Commission Report. And in his State of the Nation address in 2002, Thabo Mbeki accepts the recommendation of that report, which is a private sector document, that the government will accept this and they will show that all legislation in industries comply with BEE. And that's where the problem starts, because if BEE started in the private sector as a way of contaminating what constitutes empowerment and transformation in South Africa, it definitely means that BEE was not supposed to work. And the mistake that we've been doing is that we are focusing on the outcomes of the BEE, that the BEE has created the black elite, but we haven't paid attention to this historical background in which it shows that BEE was actually created to pervert the concept of radical transformation in South Africa. Now all we do is to focus on the outcome. And I normally give this analogy that you have a child that is crying, and while they are busy crying, you give them a sweet for that moment, and they forget about their problem. And I think that's what happens with black people with BEE. Our need is the end of the oppression of black people. And somebody brings something that has nothing to do with our emancipation and say, this is what you need. And it's capital that is doing that. And now they've managed to shift the conversation from, is the political economic structure in South Africa transformed or the ANC has failed? And now the conversation is that the ANC has failed, but we don't acknowledge how capital has managed to control the ANC in order to adopt BEE as a government policy in order to sidestep issues of transformation in a political sense.
Mm. Now, of course, let me invite some of our listeners, you know, on 0861-987-000. People of Power, I'm in conversation with Dr. Meji Makhoba, and we are just looking at his paper, Constructing Black Economic Empowerment as a Neoliberal Project in South African Mining. We are going to delve now into the mining space a bit. We're just looking at some conceptual issues that are there, but also the history of BEE. Dr. Makhoba, I'll ask you to stay on the line. I'm told I just have to pay bills a little bit. Quickly now, it's 22 minutes past 11. Please join the conversation as soon as possible so that we have enough time just to ventilate and deal with this, what has really been a very contentious issue. I mean, I'll come back to Dr. Makhoba and talk to him about, you know, his assertions seemingly aligning with what Mwele Tsimbeki has previously said, tracing BE in actual fact right into the early 90s to companies such as Neil, that were indeed being proactive for their own self-sustenance so that they can do what we call co-optation. We'll talk about that idea of co-optation and how much it might be blurring the political agenda for the emancipation of black people in South Africa.
Tweet Lukhona at Lukhona Mguni and hashtag Power Talk.
Indeed, do that or dial in on 0861-987-000 if you want to be in conversation with Dr. Meji Makhoba as we deal with his paper looking at BEE. Now, Dr. Makhoba, I mean, I'm saying, I've read some stuff from Mwele Tsimbeki. I mean, seems to be quite aligned about the seeds of BEE being this, you know, self-protecting idea for, you know, what was then the very white establishment of capital and so on. And there's this idea of co-optation where, you know, we've seen on various boards very senior members of the African National Congress being, you know, given board seats, being given directorships, being given shares and this and that, and some have been very controversial. And I'll segue into the mining space. For example, if you looked at how AngloGold Ashanti, some politicians got shares there, it was quite a really great talking point at the time. How does that impair the political vision of emancipation for all of society, particularly black people and women? And I think you touch on this in your paper, when some very senior politicians who are at the heart of decision making of government get co-opted into some of these entities.
I think that was the crux of BEE, that as Mwele Tsimbeki put it very well, that BEE was created to buy politicians or liberation movement fighters with shares. And this was actually made to ensure that all these people who are agitating for change are not being neutralized and silenced, because the moment you accept somebody's money, you create what we call a gift culture. Somebody who receives gifts from people doesn't have the capacity and the will to criticize the gift. And I think that's what BEE has done. It has created a gift culture in which these freedom fighters have been co-opted into the system of oppression by giving them shares, monies there and there, so that they can abandon the larger purpose of emancipating black people. And I think that is where the issue is, that the issue is the political structure and its favor of white capital. And now you kind of brought this black elite who benefit from that contaminated system. And what the South African media has done is to conceal the oppressive nature of the political structure and white capital and focus on this black elite that do not have larger structural power. And that is what has been affecting us since 1994, that the co-option of this black elite has actually led us astray, because we are focusing on them and they are just benefiting from crumbs. But the issue there is that they have, in a casual way, they have sold out, because there was a larger project or program of liberating black people. But within the community of black people, there are people who have taken shortcuts by accepting money from capital or joining capital as employees. And that has actually distracted the whole political movement of emancipation.
And I wonder, Dr. Makgoba, you know, what would, you know, a rethink of that emancipation project look like? Because at some point you also call, you know, the bluff on the BE seemingly being predicated on the Reconstruction and Development Program actively at a time that the RDP itself had already been abandoned as a policy proposition.
I think BEE as a policy, it's fine. But what we need to do, we shouldn't present BEE as transformative or as a model of emancipation for black people, because BEE has nothing to do with the emancipation of black people, has nothing to do with transformation, and has nothing to do with empowerment, because it was created by white people and it was meant to benefit white people. And I think it has to be left there. If the government continues to implement BEE, it has to be done with that understanding that this is not actually the emancipation of black people. And what you also see in the legislation is that you continue to see BEE being centered around anti-colonial discourses. I think the government has to stop that and confess to us openly and tell us that we are doing BEE because this is the global constraints of capitalism can only allow us to do so much, and this is what we are doing. So that the rhetoric of walking of talking left but walking right stops there. And I think that has been the issue. The BEE doesn't need to be rethinked. We need rethinking at a political level, which means that how does the political structure of the economy constitute race as a political economic differentiation that produces race-specific modes of marginalization, exploitation, and oppression? And I think the focus in South Africa should be there, that the political system in South Africa is pro-white. And what is it that we need to do in order to transform that political system? Because BEE is equal to diagnosing a larger structural problem but proposing micro solutions. You acknowledge that black people are oppressed.
Yeah.
And people will kind of believe you, that they know that they are oppressed. But instead of dealing with the oppression itself, you go talk about something that is unrelated to their needs. And I think that was BEE has managed to do, that it recognizes that black people are oppressed, but the remedies and the solution don't deal with the oppression itself. Rather, they perpetuate neoliberalism and a secure corporate hegemony in South Africa.
I will definitely come back to this point after our news break. Dr. Makgoba, I do want to talk about those structural, you know, relationships you allude to. There is also a lot of, emphasis on power relationships as you write that paper. And I'm interested to see how can we infuse our understanding of power relationships into policy making in this particular country with all the history that we have. 0861987000 is the dial. Junior, Ampisa and Freddie, I see you on the line, but let me give Katle Khodi a bite on the news so that we are updated what's happening out there.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mbune. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, that is the case. And you can also tweet me at Lukhona Mbune, hashtag Power Talk. I see some people already asking for a podcast, definitely on power987.co.za and Power Talk. There will be a podcast of this conversation. As we always, you make sure that you can catch up exactly there on our digital spaces. My guest is Dr. Mechi Makgoba, senior lecturer at the University of Limpopo. And we are talking about his paper, Constructing Black Economic Empowerment as a Neoliberal Project in South African Mining. Now, Dr. Makgoba, before I go to the lines, as I said, there's a lot about, you know, power relations. In one part on your paper, you talk about this is because language indexes power, expresses power, and is involved where there is contention over and challenge to power. And of course, that language is deliberately used in documents, policymaking documents, is deliberately used in pieces of legislation to make certain things possible and others impossible. You will know, for example, that there's been a huge fight, it's still ongoing in the courts with the mining sector over the mining charter on the principle of once empowered, always empowered, which really strikes me as an odd contention. But how do we, you know, deal with this question of power relations in policy making? How should it translate? So let's say we did the structural analysis and engagement and understanding of power relations in society. How do we make sure that the language used in policy making is in service of reversing those very power relations that are asymmetric by nature, given the history of our country and where we come from as a people?
Yeah, I think in South Africa, our problems are larger structural, and the issue here is that we have many contesting discourses in South Africa. First of all, we have what you call post-racialism, which is hegemonic in South Africa. We have non-racialism, which is also hegemonic in South Africa. And these discourses have been used for the continuation of the oppression of black people. So considering that we come from the culture of white supremacy and white domination, what we needed as a vision in the legislation is black nationalism. But you realize that ANC officials are even scared to mention the word black people.
Yeah.
Which means that we are in a serious mess, because if you are going to present black nationalism as a vision, the instant response would be that is going to scare the market. It's not the policy of the ANC. The ANC is striving to build a non-racial society. But the only way that we can reverse the oppression of black people is to speak to their conditions through the lenses of black nationalism and black consciousness. And I think that should be the starting point. Mm. But this is impossible for the ANC to achieve, because they are trapped in a quagmire of non-racialism and post-racialism. And in this space, the conversation is no longer what do we need to do to empower black people. Mm. It goes to what can we do, which means that the ANC operates with what you call interest pluralism, which means that for any policy to be passed as the vision of the ANC, it has to satisfy majority of people in South Africa. And that part of majority is white capital that is able to co-opt leaders of the ANC to draft policies that perpetuate white domination in South Africa.
Got you loud and clear. Let me go to that line and start our engagement with the people of power. Freddie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Lukhona.
Are you well?
I'm well, and how are you?
I'm fantastic, my brother.
Yeah, Lukhona, you know, Mr. Makgoba is a breath of fresh air. In South Africa today, we don't have we've got few voices like him. You know, the issue of black suffering today is because white people are still holding on to economic power, you know, and they do everything in their power that blacks should never be strong so that they can push for transformation. Look at what the DA is doing. They've been doing a few years back. They have been recruiting blacks into the DA, but those blacks, they don't talk about transformation. If you engage them on the fact that the suffering of blacks in South Africa is because white people are still holding on to power and they are still continuing with the racist policies of the past, they don't want to hear that. What they want to do is what they want to talk about corruption in the ANC. Yes, the ANC is corrupt, but the manner, the force in which they use to talk about the ANC corruption, to go to the court and fight it, it's not the same as talking about white racism and the exploitation of whites. What we are seeing now with the conflict between Africans, those who are coming from outside, and those who are here, it's because white people are still continuing with the policies of the past of racism. And they, you know, the ANC is powerless, cannot do anything about that. So we will have conversations all the time of, you know, what is the ratio of illegal immigrants? You know, we'll have those conversations, but white people are still continue to exploit and they're enriching themselves.
Freddie, I got you. Thank you for your contribution this morning. That is, of course, 0861-987-000, your favorite dial. Rampisa, good morning.
Yes, Mr. Lukuni. I don't know, Mr. Lukona, because I'm crying as I'm speaking to you. I'm
for it.
G4S. Receive you a suspension letter. Same time, I receive you a notification to attend hearing on Thursday. Issue go all the way to Kelo Tabariki. That 18% staff share trust here in Alona G4S. Here, you know, about this is the one from 2005 to today. 2005, Reba signed that deed.
Yeah.
Those deeds, yeah, signed, and then 21 lady trustee Gamohar. Haribuzi next, or as employer, and lady shares the company. Fast forward to today, when we wage that struggle, or related to Gelotavato, reformer delegated or local at this issue, receive you a suspension letter, receive you a notification. Right now, 3 o'clock today, we are going to respond there. More the court letters, it's about feelings or not the lawyer or no. They respond there, and officially I got three. Tomorrow, I got three, but I will go labor court to the lawyer at the G4S. But in particular, I got plenty of money on Thursday and Friday or no. G4S must just be shut down. Officially, I was very good what you were saying in Savon. 13% staff share trust evaluate the legiman because G4S are more 13% value are 18 million rand. Mobile to my lord, get plus minus 5,000. What's on the what is that, Mr. Mgund?
Yeah. And it seems as if even the notices that you are getting, Rampisa, are not designed for you to be able to consult adequately and then, you know, write back a very clear letter of your position. It seems as if they are just rushing you through it.
Right now, Mr. Mugun, every single office in your G4S, but it's a gamu room. Yellow or my first trading, I will lay it. But no, get suspension, and then Nagamu, Gamu room, Gamma, then Omo one high, or Otari live or more. Guys, you can't put us in one room. What if the temporary lady died without the Yamoya, but the aircon? Then the Faga poison more, another hem moya. What is that? Then they restricted our movement. Right now, it will allow Enamu. We are more than seven of us. We can't do anything.
Yeah.
So the liberation movement, Mr. Muguni, all of them, they are cowards. They can't assist black sufferers, especially the employees. The employees in South Africa, they are still suffering. White supremacy is still dominant. Because Olga Chega, you remember the Knoxman email. Because issue arena is deep and we've got a lot of evidence.
Yeah.
We can expose a G4S.
Okay.
But now, I don't know what to do with the Mela Mohorina or Asif.
Okay, Rampiza, got you loud and clear. I'll chat with the Noxman as well afterwards. But I just thought let's give that, you know, personal account because it's at the nub of the issues that we are dealing with. That staff share, of course, would have also been part of some form of BE scheme, which, of course, BE talking about questions of ownership, management, representation, you know, supply chain development, community development, and. Junior, let me talk to you before I give Dr. Makgoba a chance to respond, and Mkholisi, I'll come back to you. Junior?
Thank you. I agree with Dr. Makgoba's characterization of the economic model in this country as neoliberal. But at the same time, I want to solicit his views on the concept of developmental state, the state where it becomes a driver of economic growth through targeted, procurement of goods and services at from previously disadvantaged people.
Yeah.
I think that on that space, the government lost an opportunity. I don't believe that fundamentally the question was lost. When you look at the black economic empowerment from its inception, I think it was a noble cause. Unfortunately, it was hijacked by a group of economic facilitators who lacked the entrepreneurial skills. And another challenge again with this country, who are our entrepreneurs? Because of people who are now, labeling themselves as such, they don't have the technical skills and everything. And one of the greatest, misfortune of black economic empowerment was to take people with no skills, utilizing money from, empowerment institutions like your PIC and everything, to buy shares into already existing, companies at the expense of genuine, entrepreneurs. So I just also want to hear his views on the preferential procurement policy framework, which for me was supposed to be one of the empowering tools on an elementary level. Remember, lastly, this was a contentious issue even between Mbeki and the late Bishop Tutu about a cycle of people who were beneficiaries of black economic empowerment. We know that if ever Sanlam wanted to, an empowerment partner, they will take people who have already, benefited before. And then there was also a debate about once empowered, once you become a beneficiary of this big, a BE transaction, you don't have to come again and be a beneficiary. But unfortunately, people will come, Lukona, and benefit time and time to the exclusion of other people.
Okay, let me give Dr. Makgoba a chance to respond, Junior. I get you there. On 0861-987-000, you can also dial. We've got 13 minutes still with the good doctor. Let me give you a chance, Meji, to respond to some of those listeners.
Okay, on the first comments that he was made, I think the listener was summarizing the problems that we have in South Africa, and those are also reflected in the BEE, that we have a continuation of apartheid capitalism, which still confers white people with power. But on top of that, we have the second problem of neoliberalism, which consolidates and conceals the oppression of black people while dehistoricizing oppression. Because now, in the context of neoliberalism, race is no longer important, but it's what the government can best do in order to comply with the dictates of international markets. On the issue of preferential procurement, on paper, the idea is noble, of course. But remember that concepts operate within structures. And once you say, I want to procure goods from black-owned institutions or organizational companies, but when you check in these black communities, few people are empowered and few people have those skills, which means, and this can be linked to the education system, to the infrastructures in different communities, and that boils down to the recycling of the black elite, because the idea is good, but it has to be supported by state capacity. And I don't think the ANC government has invested time in building that capacity. In that paper, Mozwanile Masina also confirms that the procurement legislation is faulty because it doesn't address the foundational problems. Rather, it wants already black people who run functioning business to come and benefit. And majority of those are those who are politically connected. Mm. And remember that BE also operates on a patronage system. It's about who knows what and how. And that system obviously will marginalize genuine people who want to contribute to the empowerment of black communities through their businesses.
Okay. And of course, Rampisa really giving us, a view into the heart of the matter, where for compliance purposes and BE points purposes, some companies would issue shares to employees, but you would find that the employees still don't get representation in the board. When evaluation of these shares is done, there is a huge talking point about, first making sure you settle what would have been the cost of acquiring these shares, as the employees would not have paid for them. And then you find that at times the value really depreciates to the employees over time as all these calculations are made. What are some of your thoughts in terms of what he was contributing?
I think it's a crucial aspect, because it builds to issues of corporate fronting, that a corporation can announce that they are giving so much to staff, or they are giving so much to the community, but that money never really gets to the intended beneficiaries, because I think mainly because the government is not involved. All we needed to do in this thing, and I also talk about externalization of political responsibility, that you cannot create a policy and leave it to employers and employees to deal with it. If, for instance, a corporation promises its staff members certain percentages of the company's shares, government has to be involved and ensure that they force that company to give those staff members their shares. But because the government takes a big step, we would continue seeing this type of problems, because it also relates to issues of establishing a mining company.
Yeah.
The mining company would go to a community, find unemployed people, promise them heaven and earth, and they sign up registers. They agree that the company can start operating. And government officials will not necessarily be there to make sure that the company is doing everything by the book. And what happens is that few people who can manage to get something in those communities will be able to talk to mining companies, and they will be silenced with money there and there. And what happens to the larger community? They will be marginalized, because there is no state capacity in terms of facilitating the giving away of shares or the development of communities. Because if you are saying mining communities should develop the community because of historical injustices, what is the model of development?
Yeah.
And what is the role of the state in that process? Absolutely. And what is the role of traditional leaders? We have no such model. That's why companies continue to take advantage of black people in South Africa.
Dr. Makgoba, let me bring Mxolisi in so that we don't lock him out as we head towards the end of this conversation. Mxolisi, good morning.
Look, for the past 10 years or so, or even more, I've had this feeling inside, and it is a very strong conviction that our revolution was never complete. Mm. And when I hear people like Dr. Lendo speaking, he confirms that we have been shortchanged by this revolution. So I think with the academia in the black sectors, now we need to be direct in our black consciousness thinking and talking and rhetoric. Go back to the days of Steve Biko, where we take it from grassroots and conscientize the black people, because we've lost. There's no trust between the people and the ANC right now. Mm. I mean, you look at countries like Switzerland. They've got no natural resources, and yet they are very rich. The only resource they've got is trust. Mm. Why can't the ANC have trust in its people? Okay. Why is it that constantly they let us down? So until we take the power back and reinstate the revolution back in the mental and the mind frames of the people, I think we can start to see a shift.
Got you loud and clear, Mxolisi. Thank you so much joining us. Of course, on 0861-987-000, I'm sure you might try and squeeze in something, even though we are 6 minutes to the top of the hour. Dr. Makgoba, what Mxolisi is talking to ties up with Junior's point on the developmental state and what your views might be there. And I would, of course, assume that the kind of work you do is also about trying to heighten our consciousness. So it's a conscientization process about the different perspectives at which we can view certain policy phenomenon in our society.
Yes, and I think that's where the revolution should start with the mind. If we are conscious about what's happening in society, we should be able to tell which policy is good for us, which one is not. And I think what has been happening in the past 28 years has been a continuation of white hegemony, which has co-opted anti-colonial discourses. Now it's our responsibility to ensure that not every person that uses the language of black consciousness or the language of anti-colonialism has our interest at heart. Because you can even check with mining corporations, they use this language that their activities aim to deal with historical injustices. And the question would be, what are those historical injustices? Building at Tar Road, where the mining company is operating, is that ending historical injustices? And I think we have to work hard as a black community to ensure that we understand who is in government and what are they doing. And that calls for black national consciousness in South Africa, that we have to understand what is a black leader in South Africa. What principles should that black leader have? And if we are going to vote, what sort of people are we voting into power? Because under the ANC, the oppression of black people is in the state of permanency, because the ANC is aligned to white capital. And it's very hard to break that bromance, because in the ANC, there are no people who understand the type of oppression that people are going through.
Absolutely.
Because the vision of transformation has been contaminated. And this has also been shifted by BEE, that now instead of talking about our needs and what is the role of the state, we are talking about the failures of BEE. And from what I was trying to demonstrate in the paper, BEE has not failed. But BEE is a failure itself for black people.
A failure at conceptualization, basically.
Yes. So I think black people have to come to that realization, that actually saying that BEE has failed has BEE succeeded is to ask a wrong question, because white people can never come up with their policies that serve black people. Mm. It's all about consolidating white supremacy. And until we come to that realization, our oppression under this government is going to remain in the state of permanency.
Yeah. Okay, I've got Africa Sebes on Twitter saying, the 1996 class agenda, Marara, we failed to be intentional about transformation and development of the political economy. We approached this as, by the way, this conversation reminds me of Sizwe's recent book. Dr. Mashilo Modiba was also asking on Twitter, that let's just recap, what would be a key recommendation from your paper?
I think what I'm recommending in the paper as a starting point, we need more direct state intervention. If, for instance, a mining company is developing a mine in a certain community, the government has assembled a team of experts to ensure that that mining company is doing everything by the book.
Mm.
And as a second recommendation, I think we need transformation at a political economic level, because that would guarantee the fair distribution of economic power. If we talk about in South Africa, we have larger structural problem, which first and foremost is the oppression of black people and their marginalization.
Okay, Dr. Makgoba, I think Kateko wants to squeeze in something before we run out of time. Please be patient with me. Kateko, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I just wanted to find out from Dr. Makgoba, how do we, as the average South Africans, very far removed from the mining sector, then consider what he's arguing in his paper in how we operate? So I'm a young business owner, expected to be BEE compliant in how I run my organization and all of that. And hearing what he's saying is very disheartening, because obviously what it means is that what this policy was supposed to do is not really what's happening on the ground.
Yeah.
But then what is his recommendation to the average South African who's running a business who's supposed to be BEE compliant?
Yeah.
moving forward, what are we supposed to do with this information that he's providing to us?
Got you loud and clear, Nkateko. Stay listening. Dr. Makgoba, just please try make it sweet and brief.
Yes, so this builds the second recommendation I was providing, that we need political economic transformation, and everything else will follow into that category. Mm. Because if we come with grand policies, but the political system is structured in a different way that is against black people, we are not going to go anywhere. That's why E.B.D. Bush says a system can never fail people it has never meant to protect.
Yeah.
Which means that the system is not protecting black people. So, and it can't even fail them because it's not meant for them.
Got you loud and clear. Dr. Makgoba, I'm sure we could ventilate these issues for much longer, but thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Mechi Makgoba, senior lecturer at the University of Limpopo, joining us for the Knowledge Bank with his paper, Constructing Black Economic Empowerment as a Neoliberal Project in South African Mining. I mean, there's so much more we could have delved into, but time, ever so much the enemy, I tell you.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.